You get dinged up in last night's game? Or are you a weekend warrior that still thinks you've got what it takes to play, but nagging injuries are slowing you down? It's time to talk to some of the region's top sports medicine specialists. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show. All you ever wanted to know about sports medicine and maybe, just maybe, a little bit more. Here are your hosts, Dr. Brian McCarty and big-time Mike McGivern on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan.
Welcome to the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. I'm Mike McGivern, alongside my co-host each and every week, Dr. Brian McCarty from Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine. How you doing, Doc?
Hey, good morning, Michael. Doing great.
I'm excited about today's show.
Oh, I am too.
Anytime I get a chance to talk about coaching against University School and those boys over there, I love doing that.
Yeah, we're going to be talking a lot about baseball, a lot about shoulders, a lot about throwing today, so it's going to be a great show.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. Hey, before we introduce our special guest today, I want to talk a little bit about, I immediately thought of you with the Carlos Gomez thing. You know, he was all set to be traded to the Mets, and all of a sudden they said, we're not happy with that hip. And I don't think he has hip problems.
Yeah, this is sort of an interesting situation that we were talking a little bit in pre-production about this. But essentially, from what I was informed of, really through the Rich Eisen show, which I heard, he had interviewed some people about this. Essentially, the Mets wanted more in the deal. And they sort of got cold feet on the deal that they had made. And they used this hip as an excuse to get out of it. So one of the things people who are in the Twitterverse need to remember is that all these deals that are being done need to be cleared through physicals. And sometimes that's a legitimate thing. Like they'll check a guy and say, well, wait a minute, you know, we're checking his shoulder. It's subluxating. It's not stable. We're not going to make that deal for this guy. Or sometimes, as in this case, I think they can use that as an excuse to bail. And it sounds like that's what happened here, because he's now been traded to Houston, and they don't have a problem with his hip.
Right. Now, if he you know, a week from now goes out on the DL with a hip problem,
then Houston's not going to be looking
Houston's
so smart.
Not gonna look.
But from all accounts, that's going to be coincidental. It does not sound like he actually has an ongoing problem there.
Right. It was interesting, because right away it sent up red flags, like, you know, are they just trying to get out of this? And if they are, could they have said shoulder? Could they have said knee? Could they have said ankle?
They could have, but he had had a hip problem they had rehabbed him for, so it was very convenient for them to use that as their excuse. But so from what I had heard, and again, I obviously wasn't privy to the actual information directly, but secondarily, it sounds like they wanted more. They wanted some money, or they wanted draft picks, and the Brewers weren't willing to give either. Which seems reasonable given the terms of the trade.
You know, the only other injury I wanted to talk to you about was in Packer camp with Aberderis. You almost feel bad. You're hoping, boy, I hope it's not his knee again. And you shouldn't say, oh, good, it's only a concussion, now we're dealing with the brain.
As you know, we talk about concussions, it seems, almost on a weekly basis on this show, and how important it is to protect your neurologic well-being. So, yeah, unfortunately, you know, we all are kind of pulling for Aberderis because he's a great receiver and he's a Wisconsin guy. But, he has a concussion, which is not his knee, which I guess is good for his knee. But hopefully he'll bounce back, and he's going through the concussion protocol. Hopefully he'll be back shortly.
Yeah, I hope so, too. You know, one of the cool parts about today's show for us and for me is our special guest for the entire hour is Dr. Bill Pennington. And he, the driving force behind
basically one of the reasons it's so great to have him here is that Dr. Pennington was really the driving force behind the founding of Midwest Orthopedic Specialty Hospital with Dr. Butler and Dr. Stone. And he's also been really the driving force of organizing Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine. And I know he and I've worked together for a long time on some of these things, but without Dr. Pennington, a lot of these things would not exist, and certainly Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine and MOSH would not be what they are. So we're really grateful to have him here, and he's also an expert in shoulder surgery and sports medicine, and he's going to talk to us a lot about throwing. He's got two kids who played baseball and other sports, football, at a high level, and I know they beat the tar out of your teams when they were playing basketball, right?
They did not. No, they did not.
No,
I know this, that Dr. Pennington's son was a heck of an athlete. I mean, University School was Blessed, they had him and Josh Baker. The two of them were the two that people talked about all the time. Dr. Pennington, welcome.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, it's really nice to meet you. I know that we had chatted a little bit. You used to do the clock at U School basketball games, and I'm sure that the coaching staff at Heritage Christian was nice and kind and polite. And
well, as Brian pointed out to me, it did bring back memories of dodging chairs from the Heritage Christian coach at the time.
It must have been one of my assistant coaches.
I wasn't there, but I'm pretty sure Mike was throwing chairs.
I wouldn't throw a chair, not at you. Maybe at one referee or something.
Not often.
There's no doubt. It's really interesting when you talk about Mosh, and we do that obviously a lot on this show. When you started this and being one of the founders, Dr. Butler, Dr. Stone, are you guys to doing the stuff that you kind of envisioned when you came up with this?
Oh, absolutely. When we were talking in the very early stages of putting together a hospital, we wanted to put together obviously a place that it was all driven around how we provide great care to patients. How, if we were going to be a patient or if we were taking our family member to a place, how we envisioned delivering that care.
You know, can I just, I have to tell you this, and I tell Dr. Brian this a lot. You guys are in the bubble of Mosh. Outside of the bubble, with the coaches and the parents and the athletic directors and student athletes that I talk to, the respect that Mosh has outside of your bubble is incredible. I mean, what you envisioned building, you've built, and the people understand it and respect it and are big fans of what you guys do over at Mosh.
You couldn't say a nicer thing to us right now, because we're very proud of what we've done. That's exactly what we set out to do, and I think we still work very hard to keep the bar high. It's easy to sit on your laurels if you think, as I've told my kids many times, if you think that you're on top of it all, you're not going to go anywhere anymore.
Before we get into this, can I just ask, what is your son doing? What is Tommy doing?
Right now, Tommy's doing a summer internship. He's going into his senior year.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, he's going into his senior year at Bucknell University.
Good for him.
He plays baseball there. They've done well. They won the Patriot League last year, went to the College World Series, regional at Virginia, till Virginia mowed them down. But having a lot of fun.
Good for him. Well, tell him I was happy when he graduated from U School. It's good to know that he's doing awfully well. You know, Dr. Brian, when we bring in guests each week, and knowing that Dr. Pennington was one of the driving forces behind Mosh, it's got to be interesting as you guys progress into new and bigger and better, the fact that he's so involved and making sure that this is driven the right way is exciting.
Well, it is. I mean, I think a big part of this is the team that's been assembled to continue this mission has been huge. I mean, we have all these people who work with us through Mosh and through the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Program. And pretty much everyone understands that the focus of what we do is about the patient. And that makes it really easy. It's really not that complicated in the sense that if you focused every energy on making your experience great for the patient, which would seem the most obvious thing in the world, right? Then people actually feel good about it, and it works really well. And I think our employees reflect that. I think the teams that we work with reflect that. And it all starts at the top. So, yeah, we're just continuing on the mission. And it does make us happy to hear that reputation is what it is, because we see it every day. And I can't tell you how many people I've had there who say this is the best experience I've ever had. And I can't tell you how much that means to us, you know, because we're referring patients to the place that we think that's what they're going to get.
Well, that's really important, Doctor.
I was going to also bring up the point, what Brian was talking about that we built. If I walk through the hospital, the entire continuum, from the people who greet the patients at the door, the people who, if they're cleaning up rooms, if they're helping us with turnover, all of the nurses, all of the techs, these are people who we knew that they would be dedicated to our mission as strongly as we are. And that's why, as Brian said, it's all about a team, whether you're playing sports or you're delivering care to people or any business that you're in. If you have a team that's committed to the same thing, it all works out great.
I think that's really important, and you can't say it any better than that. You grew up in this area, correct?
Yeah, South Milwaukee. I'm a Rocket.
You're a Rocket through and through?
Yep.
Yeah, that's awesome. Where did you go to college and medical school?
Well, I went to University of Wisconsin-Madison for my college, and then medical school at Medical
another
College
Badger.
Wisconsin.
Man, each week we have a different Badger. Do you guys look at the resumes and the applications and say if they didn't go to Madison, they can't be part of our team?
Yeah, we have a few stragglers from places like Kentucky and Michigan and even a couple of Marquette guys, and they do nothing but cause trouble for us.
But they all wish they had gone to Madison.
Oh, is that it?
Yeah, pretty much.
That's awesome. And then medical school, obviously, Medical School of Wisconsin as well. And then the fellowship part, where did you go?
I went out to California, to the California Pacific Medical Center in San Francisco. Worked with my mentor, a guy named Gene Wolfe, who was really a pioneer in putting a lot of these procedures that Brian and I do together.
Did you know you wanted to come back then? Did you always know that Wisconsin was for you?
Well, I'm the youngest of seven kids and a big family here, and pretty much that was always the plan.
Yeah, you're coming back. Real quickly, before we get to a break, you played sports. You're a sports guy, and knowing when you started this journey, medical college, sports was where you were going to end up.
Yeah, I wrote my entry on my application to medical school. My entry paragraph or essay that I had to write was how I wanted to be an orthopedic sports medicine doctor.
That's awesome. Guys, we're going to get to a break. Other side of the break, we're going to start with shoulders, and we're going to talk a lot about it. If your shoulder hurts when you throw or when you get active, you certainly do not want to miss our next segment. Dr. Pennington is going to explain how the shoulder works and why it hurts, so don't go anywhere. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan.
They're the in crowd. We're the other ones. It's a different kind of cloth that we're cut from. We let our color show where the numbers ain't. We're the paint where there ain't supposed to be paint. That's who we are.
It's Eric Church, brought to you by our special guest, Dr. Bill Pennington. You can check out his information at mymosh.com. He's handling the music part this week. I might get back to it next week. We'll see if Dr. McCarty allows that. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. I'm Mike McGivern alongside my co-host, Dr. Brian McCarty. And again, our special guest for the entire hour, Dr. Bill Pennington. You can check his information out at mymosh.com. We're talking shoulders, Dr. Brian, and certainly when you talk this time of year with shoulders and you're talking about baseball for the most part, and the first question to Dr. Pennington is why is throwing so hard on the shoulder?
Well, obviously, the shoulder is a joint in our body which has a tremendous range of motion. And whenever you have a joint that can move around that much, and then you try to deliver something with as much force as one is trying to deliver a baseball, it's kind of a setup for problems. There are a lot of small muscles around the shoulder that are there to basically keep the ball centered in the socket of the shoulder. And when you throw, certainly when you release a ball, the force that leaves your arm is identical to the weight of your body as that ball leaves. And so it takes a tremendous amount of force of these little muscles to keep the ball centered in the shoulder. And if you do it over and over and over through a long season, especially around here where people think that they have to, you know, practice winter, spring, summer, fall, you're set up for fatigue, a loss of your mechanics, and then ultimately injury of the soft tissues around your shoulder.
Yeah, basically you're pushing the envelope. So, you know, the ball and socket part of the shoulder isn't like the hip where it's a big, deep cup that the hip is stuck into. It's more like a golf tee, and there's this ball sort of balanced on the tee, and there's a little structure called the labrum that goes around. It's like a suction cup, and that holds the ball in the center. And then these muscles that Dr. Pennington's talking about, I want you to touch on that a little bit more, is this thing called the rotator cuff. And people, I think, misunderstand because it sounds like something that spins around in the shoulder, right? Yeah. But what is the rotator cuff?
Well, the rotator cuff is a set of four muscles that literally is like a cuff around your, you know, the wrist of your shirt. It's a cuff around the ball of your shoulder. That its primary function is to keep that ball centered in the cup, in the socket, so other structures like the labrum and the ligaments don't get injured. When that balance is off, when those muscles start to weaken or they become injured, you lose your proper mechanics. And then when you throw the ball, as you release that ball, that socket might or the ball might leave the socket just a little bit. And that stress can stress things like the labrum and the ligaments and lead to injuries.
Yeah, so that's called subluxation, right? You get this micro subluxation of the shoulder. And this is how these injuries occur. Now, you know, if you throw like I do these days, you know, you can't stress it that hard. But, you know, because I throw, maybe I get a quarter of my body. Yeah, underhand probably. Maybe a quarter of my body weight. But when you're trying to throw hard, you know, things change. And so what Dr. Pennington's saying is that when you're repetitively throwing as hard as you can over and over, you fatigue these things, and then you start running into issues where you can sustain injury. So that's why it's so hard on the shoulder. You're basically pushing it to its maximum capacity.
What are some of the most common problems, doctor, that you see?
Most commonly, you know, Brian already touched on it. We talked about the labrum. I mean, right. When things get way down the line, the most common thing we see in our throwers are injuries to the labrum and then sometimes the rotator cuff. It really starts early on with what happens is because of those subluxations, that micro instability of the shoulder where the shoulder, you know, slides out a little bit when they throw. What first happens is you get a inflammation or a contracture of the back of your shoulder, your capsule, the lining of the shoulder joint actually gets kind of scarred and you lose a particular motion. We look at it as internal rotation of the shoulder. If you know, for instance, reaching your arm behind your back, that gets tight in these throwers. And what that does is it leads to a cascade where it actually pushes your ball further out of your socket and can lead to injury of the labrum and the rotator cuff. So in our young throwers, that's the first thing Brian and I see in the office is when they come in, if they have a shoulder and even elbow problems, the first thing you check is you check that motion of the shoulder, and they're always limited in that internal rotation. And that's the first thing that people see. And that's why you see the pitchers and everything being taught, especially at the higher levels, really work on that flexibility. Make sure you keep your motion that's normal, because once that starts, it can be bad.
Yeah, one of the things that people don't maybe appreciate is how complex this is, because the shoulder, the socket part of your shoulder is your shoulder blade. So, Mike, it has a ton of range of motion on your chest wall. So a lot of people don't recognize that they're tight because their shoulder blade now is moving all over. So when Dr. Pennington and I see people in the office, we check that. We look at their, we call it scapulothoracic movement, how their shoulder blade moves on their chest wall. And you can see abnormalities in this. We can, and they can't because it's behind them. You know, so they don't have any way of seeing it. But in any case, the important thing is that if you're having these issues and you're concerned about it, make sure you get in, have Dr. Pennington have a look at it, and then you can go from there.
You know, we had talked a little bit earlier about youth baseball, and you coached for a long time.
I did.
And what a great advantage for you, being a doctor and knowing what you know. And you had talked about when your team would go to tournaments, how you would pitch different, especially early in the tournament, pitch different pitchers each inning, and how important that was. And all those kids that you coached, you haven't seen any of them at Mosh, have you?
No.
I mean,
no.
They didn't have to come in to take a look at why their shoulder was bothering them. And that was a really good plan, I think, on your part, not only as a coach, but certainly as a doctor.
Well, you know, I was lucky enough. A lot of these kids that I coached, they are great athletes, and they're you know, they had the goal of, you know, someday playing college baseball. Indeed, a few of them are now on to that level. The key is always, you know, number one, what we drove into them is fitness, staying in good shape. But then two, as coaches, we really did pay attention. We implemented the pitch count program that was suggested by, you know, James Andrews down at the American Sports Medicine Institute. And you're right, we watched what we did with these kids. If they pitched, we were very strict with how we managed them. We would show up to these tournaments, which, you know, all these higher level tournaments, you start on Friday, end on Sunday, and if you go all the way to the championship, you're playing sometimes seven games in those 3 days. And I would, every kid on my team pitched, and we would throw a kid out there every inning. We would do open rotation, and by the time the championship came around, we didn't have any dead arms, we didn't have any fatigue, and we did pretty well.
Yeah, that's really a good idea and really smart. We're talking with Dr. Bill Pennington. You can check out information on him at mymosh.com. You know, we talk about Are pitch counts really effective? And I think that we probably would all say that they are. And we also talked, there's a lot of conversation, there has been for years, at what age should you allow kids to throw curveballs? And I think depending on if you're talking to the parent or you're talking to the coach, I think you're going to get a different answer. I was always told that you wait until, you know, the kid is a sophomore, junior in high school, if you can, you know, before you start allowing him to start, you know, throwing all these curveballs. What's your advice on that?
Well, I think, first of all, you want to pay attention to not just pitch selection, but pitch mechanics, making sure the kids are in great shape. Then pitch selection. If you look, I brought up Jimmy Andrews before. Hey, I'm giving them a lot of free plugs here. They've actually put together a really nice set of brochures for their Stop Sports Injuries program. Their recommendations for curveballs are, you know, at earliest age 14, plus or minus 2 years. You know, there's a lot of controversy about the curveball, whether it does actually cause arm injury or not. It's probably, you know, once you start altering mechanics of the way kids are throwing, that's just not good to the shoulder, to the elbow. And the way we, again, I'll kind of go back to the way we coach things. When we were coaching these kids, you know, the best is learning a four-finger fastball, then a two-finger fastball, and then a changeup. And you'd be surprised how just pitch and location and just changing things up that subtly can get you through until you get U13, U14. And that's when you start seeing some breaking stuff, and you can do that. And it would always drive me nuts when I would be in Cooperstown or down at Cal Ripken in Myrtle Beach, and I would be, you know, watching these other pitchers at 12 years old throwing, you know, 70, 80, you know, pitches in an outing against us, and literally 50 to 60 of those were breaking balls. Whereas if our kids would throw a curveball, it would be, you know, one or two in an inning tops, just to really fool a kid, just to make them think it might be coming.
I had a chance to interview a guy named Andy McGaffigan, pitched in Major Leagues for 10 years, and now he does clinics and things like that, and he'll ask the kids, what pitch is the best pitch? And kids, fastball, curveball, slider. He goes, no. The best pitch is a first ball strike.
Yeah.
Throw a strike, first pitch, and that's the best pitch there is.
And if you can hit the corners, you will drive the guys crazy.
Yeah. So this is, you know, I think that discussion is essentially saying it's better to learn how to locate pitches and learn how to really pitch, which is different than throwing, isn't it?
Correct.
So learning how to pitch means learning how to read a hitter, learning to look for weak spots in a swing, that's learning how to pitch. And when kids learn that, I think they become more effective at every age. Part of the issue here is development of the elbow. The elbow doesn't fuse, all the little growth plates on the elbow don't fuse until the kids get up around 14. And that's another part of the issue that comes up.
No, and I'm going to preach once again, fitness, fitness, fitness. You know, I've been lucky enough in my life now that, you know, I get to hang out with high-level baseball players. You know, like I said, my son plays Division I, and I think it's real easy for us to, you know, with a cynical eye, a lot of us fans look at these guys who are playing the major leagues, for instance, and sometimes those pitchers don't look like they're in great shape or anything, but I will tell you, from hanging out with these guys, or even I'll go with Tommy for a weekend to Bucknell, or they'll come here and I'll work out with these guys. Those pitchers who don't look like they're in great shape, if they get to those levels, they have an unbelievable amount of core strength. Their legs are unbelievably strong, and they're the most physically fit guys on the team. As far as if you want to do their running workouts with them or whatever, you'll be exhausted. And that's the key. If you're going to get these people to go on, they have to stay in shape.
Guys, let's get to a break. Other side of the break, we have a special guest that we're going to give a call. Michael Pierce, who's a standout baseball player for UW-Whitewater and a Major League Baseball prospect. I know that you've seen him and done some things for him. And when I get a chance to talk to him, really a nice young man, really a good guy.
He's a great kid.
You bet. And we're going to talk to him about the work that Dr. Pennington and him have done together. And we'll do that on the other side of the break. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. Welcome back to the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show. Music brought to you today by Dr. Bill Pennington. Check out information on him at mymosh.com.
He's got pretty good taste, Michael. I don't think we need to fire
50-50.
Him.
50-50. No Barry Manilow in that, but other than that, he's not bad. Hey, Dr. Pennington, talk to us about Michael Pierce a little bit again. Standout baseball player at UW-Whitewater, and we're going to have him on here in a minute or so. Tell us a little bit about him.
Michael's a great kid. Michael, I got to meet him, unfortunately, a few years ago after he hurt himself when he was during his tryout phase with Whitewater. He went down, he'll have to tell you where he went down to play down south. I think it was like Austin Lee or somewhere. He played there for a year and then came back home to play at Whitewater, be closer to family, et cetera. And we all know how great that program is.
It's unbelievable.
Well, he blew out his elbow. He tore his ulnar collateral ligament during the fall tryouts and, playing shortstop. And so we had to fix that for him, got back. I think they won had their success, won a national championship, and then, of course, he tore a labrum in his shoulder. So we had to fix that. And, again, he's been player of the year. He's a huge power hitter and just a phenomenal player. He's going to be drafted. He's going to probably go on. He could probably tell you about that.
Well, let's bring him on. We've got him on the line. Michael Pierce, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, no problem. How you guys doing?
Man, we're doing good. Saying nothing but nice things about you. Hey, let's talk a little bit about your experience. And first of all, when the first injury that you had with your elbow, can you tell me a little bit about that? How did that happen?
It was basically a thing where I came in and they had a little different philosophy on, arm path throwing. And they kind of just changed that and kind of raised my elbow a little bit. And one day I was just throwing, kind of felt just some like forearm tightness. I didn't really think anything of it. And I didn't really realize because I just kept throwing around and didn't really feel anything different other than tightness. And then the next day I tried hitting and it was just killing me. So that's kind of when I decided, I need to have someone look at this.
And off to Dr. Pennington. When he talks, it was his elbow, but his forearm was hurting. Is that common?
Right on the inside of the forearm. That's where the ligament attaches. It attaches on that inside bump on your humerus on the top of your elbow to the inside of your ulna on the meaty part of your elbow. And a lot of times the athletes will complain of radiating pain down the middle of that forearm there.
So what was the procedure then for that?
Well, he had to have, unfortunately, everybody hears about it, the Tommy John operation, where we can't fix that ligament because guys like, Michael, he's been playing since he's a kid. It gets stretched out for a while and ultimately tears. So instead of being able to just fix it, we actually replace it with another tendon.
Yeah, I think, hey, Michael, this is Dr. McCarty also chiming in here. Just so the people out there know, the band of the ligament that gets injured is really small. I mean, it's not a very thick or big or hardy ligament. So when Dr. Pennington did the Tommy John surgery, which a lot of people think is a shoulder procedure, but it's actually for the elbow, what they're doing is actually putting in a much bigger piece of tissue to make a new ligament that's stronger.
And where do they get that from?
Well, we get it either from the forearm. In most people, there's a tendon that they don't necessarily need called the palmaris tendon. It's a kind of an extra tendon that we have, so we take it from the patient's forearm and put it in the elbow. And sometimes people also use what's called an allograft or tissue that's been donated from people who donate their organs.
Hey, Michael, let me ask you so after the surgery, what was the therapy and what was the downtime for you?
For me, I was out. I started playing in limited innings about nine months out, which I mean that's a pretty good timetable. But I mean the rehab, I did rehab for a year and a half with it, just so I made sure everything was all worked out and everything.
Yeah, yeah. Michael handled his time off really well, didn't you, Michael?
Yeah, it was brutal. I was signed to play in the Northwoods on a full for the Green Bay Bullfrogs. So I mean that summer was a pretty rough summer, not being able to do anything.
Boy, that's one of the toughest parts, I think. You guys, and certainly I know from talking to Dr. Brian McCarty about it, trying to make sure these athletes understand how important and what to do, with that downtime. I know Dr. Brian always recommends get stronger in different areas as you're doing your rehab.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was in the weight room all the time. I mean, when I couldn't do upper body, it was all lower body. So I spent the whole summer being in Whitewater so that I could do, rehab twice a day and, try and come out a lot better than I was going in.
Yeah, Michael, we talk about that all the time. Did you find that? Did you find that when you got back, not only did you have a hunger that you never had before, but you also had some strength that you didn't have before?
Oh, yeah, definitely, because I understood, you know, a little bit more about arm care, and that's a big thing. You know, a lot of guys talk about, you know, after Tommy John, you know, my arm was, you know, same if not better. But, I mean, that's just part of that to me is just them, you know, learning how to take care of their arm, how to, you know, be consistent on your band work and all that kind of stuff.
We were talking to Michael Pierce. He is a standout baseball player at UW-Whitewater. Michael, we talk a lot about the experience and going through MOSH and going through from the time you get there for your first appointment until the end. Overall, just an excellent experience for you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I loved it. I felt, you know, completely comfortable with everything that was going on. I mean, I've seen Dr. Pennington quite a few times over the years, so, I mean, you know. It's a nice relationship where I feel comfortable with whatever, you know, he's got for me.
You know, Dr. Pennington, when you're talking to a young man like this, especially early on, and his life at this point is, you know, going to school and playing baseball, and you're going to have to take away part of that, at least for a while, and it was 9 months for Michael. Really important that bedside manner of being able to walk him through, look, we're going to go from here to here to here, and this is what we're looking at. Really important for that.
I'll tell you that Michael, I will probably remember when I meet a lot of these kids, I approach them and I'll tell them, I'll say, look, I'm a doc, I'm a sports medicine doc, and you're coming to me because we're going to get you know, back in the game. That's what it's all about. But I'll also say, I'll go back to more importantly, my experiences. I'll say, but first I was a dad, and I was a dad of athletes who I understand the passion that's involved there. And then on top of it, you know, I coached and was very passionate about that. So putting that all together, you know, it's more of a, as I kind of made a joke with Michael earlier about how well he handled his time off. It was more, you know, our post-op follow-ups were more just kind of almost being an emotional cheerleader saying, hey, you know what, I'm sorry. You know, I know you want to get going. We're just going to kind of keep you on the shelf here. You're going to be good. We're going to get you out. You know, I've been through this a lot of times with patients, my own family, myself, and we're going to get you. We're going to get you there. Just, you know, stay the course and, you know, exactly what Michael said, you know, work on getting better.
Yeah, 9 months, is that about normal for surgery like that?
Yeah, it might be a little bit quick, but for, you know, for him, he wasn't a pitcher. He was a position player. And Michael, you're still playing shortstop, aren't you?
Yep, I just graduated this year from Whitewater.
Okay.
Wait, what are you doing now, Michael?
I am a hitting and fielding instructor at Greg Reinhardt Baseball Academy in Madison.
That's awesome. Still in the game then?
Yeah, had to be in it somehow.
Are you playing at all?
No, I mean, I had quite a few decent looks this year, but I mean, I'm 24 years old and I'm, you know, I'm labeled as used goods pretty much with all my surgeries.
Well, that's at 24. I wasn't used goods then, was I, Dr. Brian?
Now you take that back in a heartbeat.
Yeah, in no doubt, in a heartbeat.
I think all of us still have our eligibility.
Yeah, oh, I know I do. Hey, any problems with, can you throw now? No problems with it at all, correct?
No, none at all, yeah. I mean, my arm feels great now. I throw tons of BP.
And the next, you're not icing that now? You're just, you're fine a couple days later to throw it again?
Yeah, I'm completely good. I mean, this whole year, baseball-wise, too, when I was playing at Whitewater, you know, I never had any arm problems.
So, Michael, I'm sure that you've communicated this to all these kids that you're coaching now, right? So, you know, making sure they're looking after themselves, keeping their core strong, staying fit.
Oh, yeah, definitely. That's a huge part of what we do here.
Boy, that's got to make you smile that he can throw batting practice and not feel any pain at all.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, there's no better satisfaction than being able to read the press clippings of, you know, this guy went on to have a few unbelievable seasons after we took care of him. There's no better satisfaction being a doc than seeing that.
Michael Pierce, thank you so much. We really appreciate your time. Hey, you guys, that Whitewater program, when you talk about football, basketball, baseball, a lot of different sports, just a great great college for different athletics up there.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, if you look at our facilities, they're, you know, they're comparable to a mid-major D1, especially with our baseball and football fields. And so, I mean, that's a huge recruiting tool in Wisconsin, especially with, you know, not being that many big baseball programs.
Yeah, there's no doubt. Michael, thank you so much for your time.
Michael.
We really appreciate it. Dr. Pennington, what a great ambassador for you and Mosh, a guy like Michael Pierce coming on this show and talking about his experience.
Yeah, great kid, great guy.
Yeah, you bet. Michael, thank you very much. Hey, we're going to get to a break. Other side of the break, we're going to hear about some groundbreaking treatments engineered by Dr. Bill Pennington at Midwest Orthopedics Specialty Hospital. There's just a number of things that we're going to try to get through in that last segment and some of the great work that that he's doing and the people at Mosh are doing. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. Welcome back to the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. Daft Punk, brought to you by Dr. Bill Pennington.
Being diverse this morning.
Yes, you are. There's no doubt about that. You can check out his bio and information, mymosh.com. Our last segment, I wanted to start with swimmers, different injuries compared to pitchers, compared to quarterbacks, to other people that are using shoulders, tennis players, same thing. Dr. Pennington, different when you see somebody who has shoulder pain from swimming is different than pitching, correct?
Usually, yeah. We see, depending on the sport, depending on the stress it causes things, my experience with swimmers, they certainly have a lot of problems with their shoulders, again, usually due to fatigue from the repetitive training. What I see in those patients is not necessarily the tightness of shoulders like we see in the pitchers from the inflammation of the posterior capsule. What we see in swimmers a lot of times, they actually get kind of loose. We call them loosey-goosey or double-jointed, you know, hypermobile shoulders. They have a hugely increased range of motion. We can actually pull their shoulder out of joint often. And as Brian was talking about during the break, they can get things called internal impingement from that motion, where the rotator cuff actually rubs on the labrum and can cause some labral tears or even rotator cuff tears associated with them.
Yeah, the youngest athlete I've ever seen with a rotator cuff tear is a national-ranked butterfly swimmer, and he was only 15 years old. And he actually had torn the labrum and the rotator cuff from repetitively impacting the two against one another. And now he recovered beautifully, went on to swim through college and did great, but you know, the point is that these shoulder motions are different. The tennis players are really throwers. I mean, you know, we just saw a couple of elite tennis players the last couple of weeks here. And one of the things I would emphasize with that Dr. Pennington had talked about in terms of fitness for throwers is the importance of the core not just being your abdomen and your back, but also your shoulder blades, your shoulder girdle, especially as you're growing up and you're getting older. A lot of these guys start getting pretty strong. They hit pretty hard. And their shoulder blades start becoming hypermobile. And so it's very important for them to work on that core stabilization all the way through.
You know, it's interesting is in this time, day and age, a lot of people are saying, look, if you're a baseball player, as you had talked about, you got to play year-round. And if you're a swimmer, you got to swim year-round. And it's interesting, if you talk to student-athletes that play three or four different sports, and they go from this sport to that sport to this sport, it doesn't seem like they wear down as much as the ones that specialize in one sport.
You're preaching right now to the choir. I'll tell you again, I've been fortunate enough to hang out with all these guys who have made it to playing baseball in college, these Division I athletes. My son, as well as his teammates, so many of them, talk about the success that they had on the football field, the basketball court, running track, playing soccer. All these kids, the biggest heartbreak I had when I would coach, for instance, youth football or whatever, was when a baseball player who I knew very well from my baseball team would say, you know what, we're not playing any, we're quitting all my sports at eighth grade because we're going to focus on baseball because we really want to play at the next level. To me, that usually was the kiss of death for their baseball career because they usually would end up getting injured, break down, because they're not cross-training. They're not giving their body the rest, and they're just com- continuing to, you know, stress those shoulders, stress the elbow, and they're the ones in our office. Those guys who are going, you know, fall, winter, not giving any rest. You know, Jimmy Andrews, he works with all those guys down south, and a lot of his program is you have to take 3 months off of playing baseball. You have to.
Yeah, and I think this is a change that's occurred since we were all in school. I mean, we all played multiple sports, we all had multiple seasons, and you know, there's also the psychological benefit of just being excited about a new thing to do and a new set of skills to learn. And there'll be times where you get to college, you're probably not going to be playing a lot of multiple sports unless you're a really, really gifted athlete. But even then, you need to make sure you have opportunities for your body to do other things and to rest and recuperate, so that when you come back, you're fresh mentally and physically for your sports.
Hey, guys, we only have a short amount of time, and Dr. Bryant, we wanted to talk to Dr. Pennington a little bit about some of the groundbreaking treatments that he is engineering over at Mosh.
Yeah, I mean, there's some really exciting things happening at Midwest Orthopedic Specialty Hospital, and Dr. Pennington's been really a pioneer in terms of some of the new procedures for shoulder replacement, biological resurfacing, creating instrumentation to do these things arthroscopically and with minimal invasion. So I wanted to talk to him a little bit about that, because this is stuff that's happening here in Milwaukee that's really world groundbreaking things that no one else is doing. And, you know, we've had the opportunity to do a little bit of that with anatomic ACL work, but he's been doing even more complicated things in the shoulder, and it's happening right here in the city, and a lot of people don't even know about it. So, Dr. Pennington, I want to talk to you about biological resurfacing of the shoulder. How did you get interested in that?
Well, Brian, as you know, you're actually quite involved in setting up the program. We have a joint restoration program at Mosh, and because we are so active, we have these kids who are active, and really, they're hurt, hurting themselves, unfortunately, in the process of being so active. We're seeing so many young patients with bad cartilage injuries to their knees, to their shoulders. And when you start seeing these people who are, 30, even younger, with injuries to the cartilage from whether it's a traumatic football injury, whether it's from, just pushing a lot of weight or multiple dislocations, you see a 32-year-old person that really the only thing that could make them better after they've had, seven arthroscopic debridement operations or labral repairs and they have end-stage arthritis would be a shoulder replacement, metal and plastic. That's a real tough thing to deal with. So we actually started quite a few years ago with different types of procedures, soft tissue where we would put cushions between the ball and the socket, whether it be out of cadaver cartilage or even skin type of cushions, to where it's evolved now where we're doing kind of combination procedures. We're putting in actual cartilage and bone to replace the old worn out cartilage and bone, and we've been having some success with it. It's something that we're developing. We're working on it. I think Brian will tell you that we're very excited in the orthopedic community about all sorts of types of orthobiologic procedures that we can do to hopefully help you keep your own tissue and not go to metal and plastic, because once you put metal and plastic in, that starts wearing out. And the longer you can wait to get that done, the better.
Yeah, I mean, the important distinction here is that the joint replacements that are traditional, which have metal and plastic, for older patients are the best option. They're great options. If you're old enough for it, that's a perfect thing for you to be doing, and it's the right thing to do. But for some of these younger patients, when it could wear out in 10, 15, 20 years, and they may only be 40 or 50 years old, now your options become extremely limited. And this is where Dr. Pennington's pioneering work is really helping these patients to try to delay the need for that kind of procedure. And I can't emphasize enough how exciting it is for us to be doing this sort of thing here in Milwaukee. And, the way the things are covered and talked about, there's not a lot of talking about positive things that are happening right here in our backyard. But these are things that are happening right here in Milwaukee. And if you're interested, you can go to the website and learn more about it.
Hey, what do you see coming in the future on all this? I mean, do you see the end game on it?
I don't think Brian or I are smart enough to know that. We're well, hopeful for a lot of things, and we're hoping that we can certainly find some groundbreaking cures, and whether it be in stem cells, orthobiologics, all these different things that can help regenerate cartilage. Small steps by steps, things are happening. There are new products that we're all working on, but I don't think we know the end game yet.
Yeah, I mean, we know one part of it, and that is the future is going to be in biology. We know that. We know that the stem cell technologies and cellular manipulation, in other words, using your own body's tissues to help heal your body, is on the horizon. We know that. We've known that for some time. And it's an exciting time to be practicing, to be perfectly honest. I had a young man in with me the other day who's planning to go into orthopedics, and we were talking about getting into stem cell research and why that's so important, because in his generation of orthopedic surgeons, which will be the next group that comes, that's going to be their frontier, right? And right. So Dr. Pennington's sort of there. You know, our joint restoration program at Mosh pushes that envelope, offers world-class treatment for these types of problems right now. And that will continue to evolve. If new things are coming, we will know about them. I was just at International Cartilage Repair Society meeting recently, and we're doing everything that anyone else is doing, and sometimes even a little bit ahead of that. So it's pretty exciting.
It's really exciting. Well, I've got to thank you, and certainly as we talked about Dr. Butler and Dr. Stone and Dr. Brian and the people that the driving force behind Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show, and I told you early on about you guys being in the bubble and the amount of respect that you get outside. I got a text during the first break from a friend of mine, Sandy Staffeld, that was in to see you guys a few days ago, and she said, look, I totally agree from the moment I walked in the door, just how what a great experience it was, something that I'd not had before. So your vision when you started this, Dr. Pennington, is coming to fruition, and I certainly commend you for that.
Thank you.
Yeah,
great
you
words
bet.
To hear.
Dr. Brian, thank you so much.
Oh, thanks, Mike.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to next week. Every show that we do, I think it gets better and better. And thank you for booking such great guests for this show. More information on Dr. Bill Pennington, go to mymosh.com. For any of the doctors or some of the work that they're doing, again, go to mymosh.com. Dr. McCarty, have a great day. Dr. Pennington, it's good to see you again.
Thank you.
Have a great day. Have a great weekend, everyone. We'll talk to you next week.
This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM. The Fan.